we are recording here in Forza office for one more podcast of the Sligo Health and Local Government branch. And we are Irene.
And Rod.
And we are stronger together. And here we are again for one more episode. We had a little bit of debate who would do the introduction today, but I think I took the short straw today, Irene.
Yeah, we're going to stick with you for the introduction anyway, unless we get like 20 emails forcing me to do the introduction next time.
Okay, so let's see what feedback we have. So, Irene, we are having a very busy week today on a union front. Our colleagues from SIPTU have been out marching for the HSE to apply a resolution that was done before, a job evaluation. The HSE has been refusing, and it looks like it's not going to be straightforward. So I'd say I wish our colleagues in SIPTU the best of luck and show them our support.
Absolutely. I passed by Sligo Hospital today, and this morning and this evening there was people out there waving their banners and looking for some support. So simply driving by, I gave them a beep, and right after we do this podcast, I'm going to pop up to them and say
beep
hello.
Them again.
Maybe bring some bottles of water because it's a really warm day in Sligo.
Oh, that's a great idea, Irene. Fair play to you. Now, on another front as well, today there's going to be an event promoted by Forza around unions taking pride, LGBT plus struggle.
Yeah, so I seen, Rod, there's an event and it's marking Pride Month. I took the information from the news bulletin today, and the event that's taking place in Dublin this evening, it's in place just to mark Pride Month, and it's going to include a discussion about how unions can help achieve marriage equality in Northern Ireland. Obviously, we were a very involved branch, Rod, last year.
Yeah.
Or was it the year before?
It was the year before, I think. Yeah, we were one of the first branches to call out and loud that we needed to support the marriage equality referendum. And we were one of the first to go out to the street as well. Our members went out to the street to defend the right for people to marry whoever they want. So this, I think this item is very, very close to our branch and to our members. On another note, we had a mention on this on our newsletter issued last week. Our Secretary General, Kevin Callanan, came out and he was defending that public services must lead climate response. I think it was actually really positive to have our Secretary General defending that. We are all in a turning point, I think, in all our lives across the world, that either we do something to protect our environment or protect the world, or we'll be leaving no earth and no place to live for our children.
Yeah, I like what you're saying, Rod, because we're really waking up and we're stopping to use big words that people don't understand, and we're being realistic about climate change and understanding that we won't have anywhere to live, or like you said, our children, our grandchildren won't have somewhere to live or somewhere nice to live. And it's about bringing it back to reality and looking at it's each and everybody's own individual part as well as a collective to do something about this.
Yeah, and I think as well this ties up as well again to a little bit of work that we started doing already in the branch. You launched the Go Green in 2018 campaign last year. I think we started doing a little bit of work already on the ground, so I think we can capitalize on that and maybe have more initiatives locally.
Yeah, I walk around work every day and I see those reusable mugs that I ordered in. It was something simple. It was a simple idea that we took on and was to stop using the reusable mugs because they just go to landfill. They can't be recycled. They're just single use. And we ordered in a lot of these mugs for the branch and for the members with Go Green in 2018. And it was just to remind people to bring that into a shop, fill it up with their coffee or, you know, in the office, just refill their reusable mug. And it's such a simple idea, but it's something that really took off, and a lot of the members really liked the idea as well because they felt that they were contributing.
On a final note, Irene, do you want to talk a little bit about what Bernard Habert posted today about the recent Labour Court resolution on bereavement leave?
Yeah, so to all our listeners, I would like to remind you that there is a great resource, and that is the news bulletins for members. Bernard Harbour wrote up a brilliant little snippet today, and it was great news, as you mentioned, Rod. Great news for health workers that in the future they will be allowed 20 days bereavement leave on the death of a spouse or a child. This came after Forza won a really important case in the Labour Court. Previously, the health workers were allowed just 5 days bereavement leave, and that has now been up to 20. And it's also actually been recommended that the changes are also applied to our Section 38 So, Rod, will we go into our pre-recorded podcast with Niall Shanahan now?
Oh, yeah. We met earlier with Niall, and he spoke a good bit about not only his role, but the role of communications and how important communications are within the union. So let's hear what he has to say.
And we have Niall Shanahan in here from the communications office in Forsa. Niall, thanks a million for coming. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about your role as the communications officer?
Well, I work with the team in the communications office in Dublin. Our head of communications is Bernard Harbour. And we've worked together now for quite a long time. I've been there for 12 years, previously with Impact. And then we have a team of four other people who work within the department. We have Roisin McCain, Hazel Gavigan, Dermot McAvard, and Martina O'Leary, who's our data protection officer. We, on a day-to-day basis, what we're trying to do is make sure that we are putting out quality communications, both internal and external. So when I say internal, we're talking about, you know, communication with the members. The biggest kind of production line piece of work that we do are the news bulletins, which we produce every fortnight, and we produce 5 news bulletins, one for each division. Then on a quarterly basis, we produce the Forsa magazines and the CSQ, Civil Service quarterly magazines. And then on a daily basis, we're responding to media queries, writing press releases, and constantly looking at how we can improve our communications. So many of our members work in the business of delivering public services. People who use public services are also interested in what the union is saying and doing around particular issues. So we're always mindful of that audience beyond the membership as well. And that's where we would direct most of our activity. And also we've been involved in the membership activist training.
Niall, one thing that I strongly believe, it's we cannot let the communications part just for national office or just for the branch. I believe that every member needs to be a source of communication to the general public. There's a lot of myths out there trying to divide the workers. An example that we spoke with Richie a few weeks ago was the frontline services are not admin staff. And there's too many admin staff in the public sector. All of these things create a very bad image for our members outside, but also divide us. So how can our members on the day to day, how can they help debunk these myths?
Well, coming to your first point, every member activist of the union does have a communications function, because actually all of the international research about trade union communications tells us that the most important point of contact, the most important medium of communications, is actually the conversations they have in the workplace with fellow union members, and particularly with their union rep. So for most members of the union is the local union rep. It's not an office in Dublin. It's not the senior leadership of the union. It is that person in their office or in their building who organizes the meetings, who distributes the magazines, who invites people to have an engagement around workplace issues. So actually that's the form of membership communications that the work we do is actually trying to support. We're led very much by the idea that that's the most important point of contact, so we try to service that and we try to support that in everything that we do. And I think there is a huge challenge for member activists to counter the kind of misperceptions that you describe, Rodrigo. I think over the last 10 years since the economic crisis, what we have seen is an improvement in the general discourse around trade union activism, around the role of trade unions, and around what would have been a very polarized debate around public sector and private sector in the last 10 years. I think that discourse has matured and it has improved. And every once in a while, there are localized attempts, I suppose, to create division between workers. But actually, I think trade union activists have been very canny and very smart. And I think possibly as a result of the kind of debate that raged during the economic crisis, in not falling for that and not buying into that attempt to divide workers from each other on the basis of competing concerns. But I think it's probably a long-standing challenge of the entire trade union movement. And so in communications terms, very simply, if you remember the training, Rodrigo, when we met first a few years ago, and one of the exercises we did was about making sure that we gather all of the facts. So, you know, opinions, everybody's got opinions, and some opinions are better informed than others. And so we always cleave to this idea that actually it's the facts that are important. And we live in an age now where factual information, unfortunately, is losing its currency. If we look at the manner in which, say, the Brexit campaign was waged by pro-Brexit spokespeople in the run-up to the 2016 referendum and in the debate since, as they tried to negotiate a withdrawal agreement and all of that, when we look at the ascendancy of Trump and the changes in the Republican Party in the US, all of those things were achieved on the back of vehicles of misinformation, of the mass distribution of noise and distraction and interfering with people's ability to engage with the facts. Now, I'm of a mind that actually in Ireland we haven't succumbed to that kind of misinformation. And I think partly that's informed by our unique experience in the world in terms of the economic crisis, how that was managed and how we emerged back into recovery. If you look every day at the manner in which, say, the government talks about the recovery that we're in, and certainly there is a real economic recovery there, but at the same time, we know, everybody knows, that there are huge numbers of people marginalised and kept out of that recovery. You know, when we look at the housing crisis, the number of people experiencing homelessness. And actually, it's an issue that, you know, the electorate of this country aren't prepared to let go of. They're not prepared to buy into the myth that everything is grand because the economy is on an ascending wave in the way that, say, we would have done during the Celtic Tiger years. That tendency toward misinformation that we've seen characterised in other parts of the world doesn't appear to be happening here. But as ever, you know, the facts are sacred. People need to be smart. And I think Irish people generally are pretty smart at disseminating the information that's given to them. I think our trade union activists in Forsa are equally smart and well-informed. And the manner in which the union engages with member activists, I hope, has helped that over the last number of years. But at a local and an individual level, I think it's important for every member activist to understand that every time they're in a workplace engagement and talking to an individual member about union business, they are the face of the union. They are the union. And that is the most important communications function that they could have, the most important experience of communications that they could have.
I found, Niall, when you mentioned about misinformation and getting messages out there, whether they're accurate or not, quite interesting. And it just brings me on to social media, the minefield of social media. And I'm just wondering, do you feel that social media has actually helped activism? And is there any positives or negatives from social media that you find in your job?
There's certainly positives, and absolutely there are negatives as well. I think the positives allow member activists to engage in a continuing conversation. Like the Forsa Twitter account, for example, looking at it over the last 18 months, the number of followers that we've had has increased steadily and continues to increase. But more than the following, it's actually the amount of activity. It's the degree to which people engage with each other. And increasingly, I'm recognizing them as, you know, branch secretaries from different branches that I've met from all around the country, as well as officials from the union, supporting each other, promoting each other's work. And like, even as an example, I tweeted about this podcast when you put the first episode out, and the response was phenomenal. I put it on the Forsa Facebook page as well. So social media as a positive in that respect has been really great for us and a really useful tool. As a negative, I suppose it hasn't been so much of a problem for Forsa, but for other organizations, it can be an outlet where people kind of dump their negativity on an organization or a project or indeed an individual, because we know that individual trolling, particularly on Twitter and particularly of women on Twitter, is a particular problem. And it's something that Forsa happily hasn't really suffered from. But I'm mindful that requires a sort of constant vigilance in order to prevent that from happening. Because again, as you say, with that kind of trolling or negative dumping on individuals or organizations, that allows misinformation to spread. And once that happens, the ability of an organization to successfully communicate its message or engage in a constructive way with stakeholders or with their audience is kind of removed. So touch wood, it's not a difficulty that we face, but it's one that we're constantly vigilant to.
That's it. So remember, email us at pro@forsasligo.com. And that's it for us. We were Irene
and Rod,
and we are stronger together.